Make yourselves comfortable. My master will be with you shortly.
On the edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go. Welcome to Nightwise.com.
Nightwise.com.
Tune tech to your way of life and let the technology work for you. Edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go, and you found it. Welcome to Nightwise.com, the one and only website to tune tech into your way of life and lets the technology work for you instead of the other way around. My name is Nightwise, and in the coming 60 minutes or so, I'll be your host in this episode of the Nightcast podcast entitled Gear and Workflows. For more information and the show notes, visit our brand new website, www.nightwise.com. That's KNIGHTWISE.com to find the links to everything that we talk about and, of course, the show notes. But also, more importantly, you can find the feeds. We have several RSS feeds that let you subscribe to the Nightwise.com content. We have the media feed that gives you the Nightcast podcast, the KWTV screencasts in your favorite RSS reader or podcatcher of choice, or you can just subscribe to the podcast or the screencast separately by using their respective feeds. You can also find everything in iTunes. The only thing you have to look for is Nightwise. If you want to get in touch with us, you can. At Nightwise is our Twitter address, and feedback@nightwise.com is what you can use if you want to send a good old-fashioned email or voicemail. Well, we have a lot to get to. Let's get right into the meat of the matter after we tell you a little bit about what Nightwise.com and the Nightcast podcast actually is, because some of you might be new since this is a new season. So we'll dive right into that. Hey guys and girls, it's great to be back. Welcome back to the Nightcast podcast. Welcome back to Nightwise.com. Welcome to season three of yet another fantastic chapter in the whole Nightwise.com adventure on the edge of real and cyberspace. It's been a couple of weeks since I've been here, and it's so great to be back behind the microphone, headphones on my head. The room has been darkened, the screens are glaring, my show notes are waiting, and I know that some of you have eagerly been awaiting this episode of the Nightcast podcast. Now, I did promise a little bit of a 101 for the people who might be new, because this is season three of Nightwise.com podcasts and screencasts. So we will try to recap in five words, give you the elevator pitch of what Nightwise.com is all about. I am Nightwise. That's not my real name. If it were, it would be really cool. But it's a name that I have chosen a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And I am the one and only responsible force of Nightwise.com, at least of the crazy production stuff that happens on there. I have many talented people that support me in this process, but I think of all of the crazy stuff. Nightwise.com is a website about how to tune technology into your way of life and let the technology work for you. With technology becoming ever more complex and abundant, people are mostly sometimes working for technology, getting to configure a smartphone and do this and update their viruses and scan that and blah, blah, blah. And before we know it, the more gear we get, the more time we have to spend in that in the maintenance and the programming and the using of that gear. That's not actually how it should happen. The philosophy of Nightwise.com is to take real-life situations and tell you how we tune technology into your way of life to make that technology work for us. So, the basic concept of Nightwise.com is very simple. We teach you ways to let your tech work for you and be the master of your technology and let technology improve the quality of life. We have a website, www.nightwise.com, where we post regular articles. We have a podcast, which you obviously know that exists since you are listening to it right now. And if not, if you are suddenly listening to this podcast and think that, hey, I didn't know this was a podcast, then you're probably suffering from sleep podcast listening, where you've accidentally in your sleep selected this podcast and put it on and are now awaking to the sound of my voice where I tell you that you're in the nightcast. Never mind. We also have a KWTV screencast. This is a video edition that we do once every 2 weeks, hopefully, if we have the time. And there we review gear and also give you tips and tricks on how to tune tech into your way of life. And if all goes well, in season 3, we will have a live show every month where you, the listener, can interact live with the show hosts and the guests that we have on the show. Because KWTV Live is basically a recording of KWTV, a live radio TV transmission for geeks by geeks to be enjoyed by geeks and non-geeks, of course, where we basically do interviews, play music, and interact with the chat room. That is all that Nightwise.com does. So if you didn't know, now you know. Time to get into the meat of the matter of season 3. It's been a couple of weeks since we've been here, and it's time to get back into the thing. We're going to have a new schedule. The great thing is Niana is taking a course. That's a great thing because she's doing a special course on Wednesday evenings. And that means that I also get to spend my Wednesday evenings alone at home. Yuppie! Yes, I can sit back. No, I enjoy having Niana here every single night. But on Wednesday nights, I get to sit behind my screens and be blissfully unaware of the world around me just to talk to you guys. So probably there's going to be a little bit of a change in schedule on the production of the Nightwise.com podcast. I am planning on putting one out every 2 weeks and putting out a screencast every 2 weeks and probably once a month a live show. We'll see if life doesn't get in the way, but we will surely try. So, time to get into today's topic. What are we going to talk about? Gear and workflows. Well, Nightwise, that kind of sounds very fluffy to me. It is very fluffy, my friends, but it will not be for long. I've got a massive bunch of show notes right in front of me, because today what I'm going to talk about is how I do this show. What kind of gear do I have? How do I use it? And what is my workflow for producing what you are listening to right now? Because when you ever had, and I know you have, had the thought, oh, Nightwise, I wish you would produce more shows. I wish you would be more regular in your podcast production. When's the next Nightcast due? Why don't you do this for a living? Where's my fix? You know, stuff like that. Well, I decided it was also time to tell you how I do the show. What gear do I use? What workflows do I have? So kind of a behind-the-scenes look of opening season 3. Bah. What? It's podcasting. We get to do what we want. On a DVD, you get the specials on the end. Here, you get the specials in the beginning. So, let's get into the meat of the matter as we are going to review what gear I have in the house, how I have that gear worked up, wired up to my network, and what I use every system for. And then, in a second part of the show, we are going to talk about the Nightwise.com workflows. Where do I get my stories? How do I pre-produce the shows? How do I record the shows? How do I post-produce? How do I publish? Even if you're not into podcasting and screencasting, it might be a nice insight to see what podcasters, in general, are going through to get you, yes, you, the listener, your content. See how we tune tech into a way of life. Into our way of life and into yours by producing the podcast. But that's not important right now. See how we tune tech into our way of life and how we use the gear that we have in the workflows that we thought of to bring you this very podcast. Enjoy. The greater the skill of the expert, the fewer tools he will use. It's a Chinese saying that basically says if you're really, 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 really good, you don't use as much gear as the people that are not really, 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 really good, but just really good. So the more skills you have, the less gear you use. If I take a look at the gear that I have, I don't have a lot of skills. Apparently. But what it does mean is that if you really know how to work a certain tool, whether that is gear or software or workflow, you don't need a lot of extra equipment. back in the days at the highlight of my computer network stuff, I had 17 computers in my house. That's a little crazy. I don't have as many in my house anymore, but we might want to take a look at what I have in the house and what I use it for. Well, let's just start out with the laptops, the desktops, and the mobile devices that I have. The laptops, simple. I've got two laptops. I have a MacBook Air, which some of you might remember from season 2, which is a 2009 MacBook Air. So it doesn't have an SSD drive yet, and it only has a slow spinning drive. And it's a 13-inch MacBook Air, great little device, and it runs Linux, because quite frankly, Snow Leopard is extremely slow on it. It's my main Linux machine. I use it a lot if I can, if I don't have to do any production work and just, you know, write for the blog or check feeds. It's a cute little device that I love to use, and it's basically always around the house. Its bigger brother, the MacBook Air also gets used by Niana, by the way. Its bigger brother is a 13-inch MacBook that I bought in the beginning of the year. And that is also a KWTV episode that you might want to check out. And that one I use mostly for my production. It's my mobile workstation. It has 8 gigabytes of RAM. It has a solid state drive. It has an extra 500 gigabytes internal drive. It's really fast, and it packs all the tools that I need to do remote or mobile production. I write my blogs on it. I edit some podcasts on it, do a lot of video editing on it. Basically, it's my main mobile machine. Then we also have some desktops. One of the desktops is a 24-inch iMac that gets used by Niana when she needs to go online. It has Lion, it's sitting on the den, and it's not being used a lot right now because of the tablets that I'll get to a little bit later on. But right next to it is my main production machine, the machine that I am recording on right now, and that is a i7 Mac Mini. Now, Morning, fan of the show, asked me if I could tell him a little bit about the machine that I was using as my main production machines. Well, what I do want to say about this little machine is Macs are extremely expensive. They really are. And if you want to buy yourself a 27-inch iMac with a decent processor and a nice amount of RAM, you are really losing a lot of money. I wanted to have a powerful machine and not lose a lot of money. So what I did is I bought an i7 Mac Mini, which comes in at about 800 euros. I then went out and bought two 24-inch Dell displays, which are 250 euros a pop, coming to a amount of 800 and 500 is about 1,300 euros. Then I went to the computer store and bought a pair of RAM sticks for my Mac Mini, which were 2x8 gigabytes of RAM, non-Apple RAM. This is Corsair Mac certified RAM. I looked it up online, and the Mac Mini, although Apple says it can only carry 8, can actually carry 16 gigabytes of RAM. And that is what it's running right now. It has a 500 gigabytes hard drive, some external USB and FireWire drives for production stuff. It powers these two 24-inch displays beautifully, and it comes with a whopping 16 gigabytes of RAM. If you want to do quick math, this device has cost me about 1,400 to 1,500 euros, which is absolutely a steal if you take a look at not only the power, but also the displays and everything that I have. Great little production machine that plays a central key role in our house. Downstairs, we have another desktop, and that's basically a PC. It's an i5 Picard Bell PC tower, and it's the only tower we have in the house. And it is basically used as our media center. It runs Linux Mint. And then I still have an old Asus EEE box, you know, these little desktop PCs with an Atom processor that I also run Linux on and use as an external server. So, as you can see, not a lot of gear, just about 2, 4, 6 computers, which is not a lot for 2 people. Is it? Well, whatever. We also have some mobile devices. And these mobile devices are our iPad, We each have our iPad. I have one from work. My wife has one that was owned by me. And I'm planning on getting my own iPad pretty soon again. We both have an iPhone. And there's also an Android phone kicking around the house that I use for work. And we also have two old iPods. One is a third generation and one is a first generation. These are the mobile devices that are around the house most of the time. On the ground floor, we don't have any desktop computers. We have our PC there that functions as our media center. It's hooked up to our TV. But aside from that, we have absolutely no desktops on the floor. All our desktops are in the den upstairs in the office. And our laptops kind of roam around the house, basically only if we need to really do something. So what do I mean by do something? I have a little bit of a trick to help me decide what I use for what task. And I do want to share that one with you this week. I have a rule. Content production gets done on a desktop. Long hours of working from home and stuff like that get done on the desktop. That's good for your back. You sit down, you've got big screens, you look straight ahead, you don't have a sore neck. If you want to sit down and produce content for a prolonged period of time, I use a desktop. If you want to produce content for a prolonged period of time, for not so long period of time, you can use the laptops. The laptops are powerful enough to do this, and we usually use them when we are downstairs. And I also use my MacBook Pro quite a bit just to surf around because I want to keep my main system absolutely clean because it's a production system. So content productions, desktops, small pieces of content production, laptops, and content consumption is mostly done on the iPad. A lot of surfing is done on the iPad. Watching movies is done on the iPad. Watching podcasts is done on the iPad. Reading books is done on the iPad. But one of the things that I don't have enabled on my iPad is all of the social networks. These are banned from both my iPad and my desktop. The trick not to go on Facebook.com on your desktop is to disable your password and have Facebook send you an SMS with a key code, a number code instead. So every time you want to go to Facebook, it works, but you have to log in, they send you an SMS, you have to get your cell phone out, type the number, and that kind of helps you not to impulsively log into Facebook. So I don't do that. So on the iPads, I used to have Facebook and Twitter and stuff. But especially when I started watching movies and reading, I was constantly disturbed by tweets or kind of, you know, thrown off track. And I had to start over reading. And I was starting to find that the joy of using my iPad to consume content was kind of taken away by the constant interruptions that I had with all of these instant messaging things. So what I did do is I chucked both Facebook and Twitter off of my iPad, but I still have iMessage and FaceTime on there, but I only launched that when I wanted to. I also disable all the push notifications, so I'll get there when I'll get there. There's a little number that comes next to the icon of a certain application when I have an update there, but it doesn't pop up anything, so it just leaves me in peace. And I use my iPads actually quite a lot to consume media and also plan the show and stuff like that. Now, I know what you're going to say. No, my God, what do you use to talk to the world? My phone. Well, phone. I do make the occasional voice call, about one every 6 months. But mostly, the iPhone that I use, I have an iPhone 4S, we both have, is used for communication. We have Twitter on there, we have Facebook on there, we have Skype on there, we have everything you want on there to communicate. And all of the interruptions are on there. All the communications are channeled to our phones. We use our phones at home over Wi-Fi to do Skype. We use them to do FaceTime. We use them to do iMessaging. We use them to do Twitter. We use them to do Facebook. And what I found to be very rewarding is just leaving the phone downstairs and going upstairs and doing your stuff without getting interrupted every 5 freaking seconds. So that is actually quite a nice setup to help you be more productive So separate the tasks that you have from the separate types of gear that you have, and you'll see that that helps a lot. I was kind of getting off topic because I only wanted to talk about the gear. The Android phone is an older HTC Desire HD that we use sometimes as a phone, not a lot. Mostly it's lying around in the house functioning as a remote. And the iPods that we have, we also pumped full of music and we use them as remotes because we have docked them to several external speakers throughout the house. And we use them as kind of mini iPads to stream music and stuff like that. That's it for gear. Not a lot, as you can see. Not that a spectacular amount of computers around the house because, you know, in addition to that, we of course have some microphones and cameras kicking around, but that's something I'll talk about a little bit later on. But basically, in the entire envelope of the gear spectrum, I don't have a lot of gear. And I can tell you that the less computers that you have, the more productive you become. The more systems you have, the more your attention gets dispersed over them, the more you have to maintain them. I don't have a lot of systems to maintain. I've got about 4 Macs in the house that I have to, well, actually 3 Macs and a Linux system that I have to maintain when it comes to main operations. And I've got 2 kind of media boxes / servers that I kick around. Not a lot of maintenance is required. The maintenance that has to be done right. But since I've split up the tasks of the different systems, it does help me to get things done. Production machine says production. When I sit down, I looked at a lot of life hacker posts that talked about where you sit is what mindset that you have. So when I sit down behind my production machine, as I'm doing right now, my mind immediately focuses on I'm going to do production and I'm not going to surf around on this system. Surfing around, I do that on the iPad, I do that on my Mac. So I'm not actually tempted to go to Dig or Reddit or God knows what because I don't do that on this machine. This machine is for really serious work. Whether that may be podcast production or when I work from home. Very nice way to work. Laptops give us the dynamics to work powerfully wherever we want to consume the media we use are portable devices, which actually scream, use me for content consumption and carry me around everywhere. So that was the gear that we use. Next up, I'm going to take a little bit of a look at the workflows that I use to use, I'm completely losing my trail of thought. Next up, we're going to take a look at how I use these machines in my network setup and what I use each machine for. That's in the next part of the show. I did give you a little bit of an idea of how I use the systems in my head. These systems are for that, these systems are for that, these systems are for that. Now, technically, I'll give you a little look at what systems do what in the house. First of all, we have that media server that I talked about. It's a Packard Bell i5 with 16 gigabytes of RAM and 2 terabytes of internal storage and some external drives hooked up. Basically, it runs Mint 10, Mint Linux 10. It has the Samba server installed on it, so I can use it as a file sharing NAS. So if I download something or I want to watch something on the media server, I can just download it. I can just shove it over there over the network. That's all I see from Linux, because when the system starts up, it immediately runs XBMC, Xbox Media Center. This is a free media system front end that is so powerful, I have to do an elaborate show on just XBMC. XBMC lets you play content from the internet, from your computer, from another computer on your network in a very spiffy looking interface on your, well, media center. Now, if your media center is hooked up to a screen, it works on a screen. If it's hooked up to a TV, it's hooked up to the TV. So what we use XBMC for mostly is to watch all of the shows that we legally purchased and then with legal permission of the local government or copyright law encoded to files to store as a backup of our righteously purchased content on our server. You know what I mean. So that's what we use that machine for. It's basically our main source of content, whether that be movies or TV shows that we have on that machine, or that those are sources that come from the internet where we directly stream podcasts or look for great movies that are on the internet archive. XBMC can do all that. It will not only provide you with a playback platform, it will also provide you with a content gathering or aggregation platform, and basically it will also allow you to share that content that you have on your XBMC media server with other computers on the network. We'll get to that a little bit later on. What XBMC also offered is an AirPlay functionality. This means that if I have content on my iPad and I want to show it on our TV, I can, using AirPlay, stream the audio or the video through XBMC on our TV, which is very convenient if you made a little movie with your iPhone or with your iDevice and you just want to show your family that, you just throw it at the TV. Well, not the iPhone, but the content, and that works great. Now, I did a special on how I streamed content all over the place, and one of the things that I also wanted to do is have the content that is on the Media Center be played on the iPads. So I installed Mini DLNA Server. DLNA, short for Digital Lifestyle Network Association, is a standard that lets Mini DLNA servers, which hold audio content, audio and video content, stream that content over the network to DLNA clients, whether that be a computer, an application, a mobile device, perhaps your TV has DLNA. So it's kind of like an audio streaming standard, audio and video streaming standard, and I use that quite a bit. The iPods that we have in the house function as a remote for XBMC. There's an iPad app that you can, there's an iOS app that you can download for free to remotely control your iOS device. The great thing is with this computer is that we don't really see it as a computer. We see it as an appliance. It automatically boots up in the BIOS at about 4 in the afternoon. So when we get home, it's already purring. And I have a script on Linux that shuts it down 12 o'clock at night. So it's basically just like a DVR, and we use the iPod, the old first generation iPod, as a remote to control the system and consume our content. That's it for the media server. Very simple, and I really like using it. The second machine that I have is my i7 Mac Mini, which is a Lion server. It supports OS X Lion, and I've installed a Lion server on it. It has several functions. It's our home file sharing for not too big of a files. I've got 500 gigs on here, and basically, if it's not, all the media is in the media center, so we don't have a lot of content that we need to share out. And it works great for that. It supports Apple file sharing protocol and Samba. So it works with both our Linux and our Mac systems in the house. It's a VPN server. I can VPN into it from wherever, using my iOS devices, using my Android devices, using my Mac or whatever device I have. So I always can access my network over a secure tunnel. It also has all our songs, so it's our iTunes server, and we use it to play the tunes in our iTunes server to the AirPlay speakers around the house. We have several, some of them hooked up to XBMC, some of them hooked up to one of those Airport Expresses, and we use it, because it's always on, to play music wherever we want to go. It's also our podcast production machine. And it has a little bit of software called Podcast Producer, which does help me with the production of the show. But we'll get to that in the latest fact, in the latest chapter, in the latest, not the latest, the last, in the last chapter of the podcast, what I use Podcast Producer for. So the i7 server is a really compact, little, simple device. I use it for podcast production, but it also does some server functionalities, but we don't have a lot of clients in the house. Apple Server or Lion Server is about 30 euros if you want to buy it. And I would highly recommend if you want to geek out and want to play around with some Apple things or non-Apple things or have a cool server and see what Apple can do, I would highly recommend just buying that and playing around with it. Here in the house, we don't do a lot with it, but it does exactly what I want it to do. The last machine that is actually right next to it is my Ubuntu box. Yes, the Asus EEE box that I have. It has an Atom processor, about 200 gigs of RAM or something, and 200 gigs of storage and 4 gigs of RAM. This is what you get when you record really late. You're a little tired and you do kind of make some mistakes. Sorry about that. And it basically is our slot. We call it the slot. The slot is not inside our network. I have two subnets. I have my ISP's router, and that has a subnet. And behind that router, I have a second router, my Airport Express. And that is actually the router behind where all of my devices are. But inside the router of my provider sits one device, and that's the slot. The slot is called like that, is called the slot because it's basically accessible by everyone. The slot is the only machine that is accessible from the outside without VPN. I've opened up SSH connections so we can do secure FTP or command line interface, and I've also opened up port 8080 or something like that for OwnCloud. OwnCloud, which we talked about in a previous show, is a web-based interface to share files with. Now, that's pretty nifty, but I have also enabled Samba on that server, not from the outside, but from the inside. So I can push files onto the server using Samba file sharing, and people can get to it from the internet using OwnCloud or an SFTP connection without having to interact with my personal network directly. I like this way of working, and why I use it is because, you know, sometimes you have to get files around the internet. I do podcasting and screencasting. We have big files. Big files do not fit on Dropbox. Big files do not fit in emails. Big files are not to be written out in post-it notes and tied to a hedgehog who is then shipped across the planet. We need a server solution of our own. Now, you can do that online, but I don't really like that. So I just have all of my crap that has to be accessible from the outside to fellow podcasters or listeners or God knows what available via that machine, the slot, which is the machine that is available from the outside and that also has accounts that are from friends, for friends or for relatives. They can log into the machine. And because it's nicely outside of my network, I don't have to worry about it because there's still a router firewall between it and my data. The data that's on the slot is kind of public data. I don't put confidential data on that. That would be stupid. And I haven't put it in a dark corner somewhere. No, I've actually hooked up a screen to it. So if I want to surf a website or I want to visit something and I'm not really sure if it's 100% safe, I use the slot. It's very convenient to have a machine outside your trusted network. If I want to do a network test of my internal network, I use the slot. If I want to download stuff from the internet and I'm not sure it's safe, I do it on the slot. But because it's still inside my office, it's really convenient to use. I don't have to go downstairs or log into a remote system or anything. I just, you know, punch up the keyboard and the mouse and start typing. I've also installed XBMC on that machine, and I use it to stream YouTube or film movies from the Internet Archive. So it also doubles as kind of a TV screen when I am doing my podcast or production or just geeking out in my office. Very, very nice way to set that up. And it's a very productive machine, I must say. And it's nice to have it near me when I want to work, but still far away from me when it comes to network security. And that's basically how we set up all the gear in the house. But aside from the gear that I have in the house, I also need the gear to go outside the house and record the KWTV screencast and record the Nightwise.com podcast. If you think that I'm going to give you a big list with lots of stuff, that are all kinds of fancy cameras and microphones and compressors and equalizers, you're going to be in for a little surprise. I basically have three pieces of gear I use to record the podcast. When it comes down to the podcast, I've got a Zoom H2 microphone. That Zoom H2 microphone is pretty nifty because it can actually be used as a standalone recorder, a microphone with a built-in SD card recorder. It can be used as a recorder for external microphones, and it can be used as a USB microphone. So when I'm in the studio, I hook it up to iTunes and I record as I do right now. When I'm outside, I record on the SD card. When I need to record an external audio source, like for example a lapel mic, I use it as an audio recorder. It's not expensive, it's very versatile, it sounds pretty good, and it just works. I use it for interviews, for in-house work, and for recordings on the road. Really simple. When I'm on the road, I record podcasts in my car. I basically tried everything aside from a kitchen sink to record podcasts with. I had iPods that I did it on. I did it on iRivers MP3 recorders. I did it on iPhones. I used all kinds of microphones, and I've come to the conclusion that simple is good. So I got myself a JB Systems boom microphone, which is very nice because it cancels out a lot of road noise in the car. And as a recorder, I use the Zoom H2. That's the gear I use to record in the car. And of course, I also record stuff online. Sometimes I want to record a Skype conversation. Without going through fancy hoops and loops, I just use the application Skype Call Recorder, which enables me to record my conversations on a Mac. I'm also working on a way to record screencasts or Google Hangouts, but I'll post a how-to on that pretty soon. That's not part of the standard workflow yet. So that's basically everything I use for the Nightwise.com podcast. The Zoom H2 to record, an extra lapel mic, and a boom mic. If I want to sit down and be part of a Skype conversation or just want to do a quick and dirty podcast recording, I can also use my Plantronics boom microphone, which is a USB mic. But most of the time, it's the Zoom H2. When it comes to recording the screencast, well, that's pretty easy. I have a tripod, and on that tripod, I have a HDR CX115 Sony Handycam with a 16GB SD card. It's an HD recorder, it's very light, it's very simple to operate, and it works great. That's how I do it. If I want to record stuff inside, I either use the HD camera on my MacBook Pro or a Microsoft HD 1080p webcam that I got out of the media market. Those are the two extra cameras that I use, and that's about it when it comes to the gear to record the Nightcast podcast and produce KWTV. Having gear to produce content is not a goal. It's a means. It's basically a collection of tools that you have to do something that you like to do. I don't produce podcasts because I have a lot of gear. I have gear because I want to produce podcasts. And what I've learned is that the lesser amount of gear that I use, the more efficient my process of producing a podcast becomes. Scaling down and refining the workflow of production of a podcast is very, very, very important. This is a podcast about technology. So if I let it sit for 3 weeks on the production table because I have a very, very, very complex production schedule, I'll never air the show. If I have a production schedule and a workflow that is very, very light and actually automates or, well, facilitates the production of a podcast, I'll be more in a very quick way, I'll be, you know, sitting behind the microphone going like, you know, I'm going to smack out a podcast without saying, oh God, I'm going to make a podcast and that's going to take me forever and I don't know what I'm going to do with that and blah, 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 blah. That's not how it's supposed to go. So what I've done over the 6 years that I've been doing this is actually refine my workflows to make production of a podcast as simple as possible so I can get my creative urges out there in a well-maintained form, in a well-presented form, as quick as possible. We'll start out by talking about how I do the Nightcast podcast. The Nightcast podcast, podcast about tuning tech into your way of life, that means that you need two things. You need tech and you need a life. You need a life, okay? I need to experience real world problems so I can go look for and find technology in order to solve it. If I were in an isolated cell just surrounded by computers and would not see anything of the outside world, I'd never be inspired to basically hack a media center into our living room to kind of facilitate us and help us watch content that we would otherwise download and do God knows what with. You know, you need a real problem. Yeah, there's nothing on TV. Oh, okay. Well, perhaps we can try this and perhaps we can tune it into our way of life. Real world problems, real world situations that I encounter are the basic inspiration for getting my content. Sometimes I get them off RSS feeds or I find stuff on RSS feeds that I play around with and then I take it to do a podcast about it once I've, you know, gain some expertise. Or sometimes I get inspired by what people say in other podcasts, but mostly things in my everyday life. Certainly problems that I run into and creative ways to solve them using technology, because technology is a means, it's not a goal. When I need to experiment with some of those technologies, I don't do it on my main systems. My main systems remain clean. In order to do that, keep them clean, I use virtual machines. My two main systems, the Media Center and the i7, have 16 gigabytes of RAM and VirtualBox, basically enabling them to run several virtual machines at the same time and giving me a whole range of disposable computers and operating systems to experiment with and try things out with. And I also use them to do the screencasts with. I just record the VMs without too much hassle, and I can easily set them up, reset them, and experiment with them. Very, very simple. Now, the production of the show itself, or the pre-production. What I've set up in order to facilitate me when I'm recording this is a GarageBand template. It's a GarageBand track with all of the different tracks already put in place, empty tracks, and the bumpers are put in place on the bumper tracks. So I open up GarageBand, I've got my entire, recording tracks already set up with the right filters, and I basically click track, 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 and I record every single track. I know it's painfully simple, but guess what? It's painfully simple. I know it's just GarageBand. Yes, it's just GarageBand, but you know what? It just works. And you can do this in Audacity, or you can try this in Logic Pro, or you can do this with a professional studio with a mixer and God knows how many cables. But for me, this just works. When I do a mobile recording, I just take the separate tracks that I recorded and I drop them inside GarageBand. And all I need to do is add bumpers, shovel the audio tracks in the right order, and export it as a podcast. I've got some jingles and some intro tracks that I've made. I've had some help from Katie Murray and Larry Bushy to make some audio jingles, but the music that you hear is mostly original work because, you know, that's also a creative urge that I need to scratch sometimes. And some of the jingles that you hear have been produced on the iPad using GarageBand on there. Pretty nifty application, by the way. $5 for GarageBand on the iPad, and I was able to make all of these jingles for the Nightcast. So in pre-production, there's a template in GarageBand that has all of the intro music and of the bumpers in place, so I only need to add the audio tracks, and all of the settings are okay. Now, once I've got the pre-production set up, I need to record. When I do it in-house, I just do it in GarageBand. I hook up the Zoom H2 via USB to GarageBand and just record, as you're listening to right now. When I do it on the road, I use the Zoom H2 recorder and the JB boom microphone, and I just add the tracks from the H2 recorder to GarageBand. And sometimes I use my Plantronics headset, or I use Skype call recorder or the Google Hangout recorder setup that I've been working on, and drop those audio tracks into GarageBand. Very simple. The post-production is simple. I need to edit them down a little bit. Need to make sure that the jingles are in the right place. Normalize the whole track so everything sounds nice and crisp and at the same volume, and export it. And make an MP3 out of it. That's it. That's how easy it's done. Basically, I just click share, export, and I have the settings that I want to export at saved in GarageBand, and that's it. Once recorded, very simple. I upload the file to the Internet Archive. That's where I host my files. They're free, they're reliable, and they can handle quite a bit of a bandwidth. So the files go up to the Internet Archive. I type in the description and the show notes, and then I put it on the blog. I have a WordPress blog, so all I need to do is write a post with the show notes and upload the media file to WordPress. And if I am correctly, PodPress is the name of the extension, we'll make a link to the file, we'll give you a little player so you can play it on the website. And the file that I actually link to it is the file that is stored on the Internet Archive. So even if you play the show from the website, you're playing the file from Internet Archive. WordPress automatically updates the RSS feed because there's a new entry, and I have two special RSS feeds, one that has both the podcast and the screencast, one RSS feed for the podcast and one RSS feed for the screencast. Those RSS feeds get updated via FeedBurner, get updated to the iTunes media store or media or music store or God knows what. And depending on what podcatcher you use, using either iTunes or another one, you get the new episode in the feed. It's actually that easy. Now, once you put something online, you of course need to tell everybody about it. And I thought I was too lazy to do that. So I've used an application called Twitter Feed to automatically post new entries on my blog using an RSS feed to the several social networks. So once I update a podcast, updates the podcast feed, the podcast feed updates Twitter feed. Twitter feed takes the last title of the post and puts that on Twitter, on Facebook, and on LinkedIn, basically telling everybody that I have a new show automatically without me having to do anything. The only thing I need to do is write an email to the guys from Hacker Public Radio, who sometimes carry an episode of the show, telling them I've got a new show out and point them to the link. And that is how I make a podcast. It's really simple, but that's the secret behind fast podcast production. In the next chapter, I'll tell you how I do the KWTV screencast, and you'll be surprised that it's even easier than doing the podcast. Although the workflow of producing a KWTV screencast is even easier, it is a little bit more complex to do. There's a little bit more work that goes into a KWTV screencast than a Nightcast podcast, because there's much more content to be taken care of. Getting to prep the show means that I need to get the gear that I want to review for you guys. I've got great friends over in Eindhoven, the guys from PHCU, sometimes lend us stuff. Sometimes we get stuff sent to us from the reviewers, and sometimes it's stuff we buy ourselves. Most of the time, well, 99% of the time, if we get stuff to review, we have to give it back. But it's still fun to play around with stuff. Sometimes I want to show you guys how to do something on the screen. So I set up a screencast, and in order to do that, I don't need as much preparation. I just need to pick a topic, grab a virtual machine, and record that. Recording a screencast is easy. I use QuickTime, and QuickTime has the ability to record on screen. I used to use a special application for that, and then I found out that QuickTime does it just as good, so I just use QuickTime. I punch the Zoom H2 microphone into the computer, record using the microphone, let you see what I see, use a virtual machine to demo it, and that's how I do a screencast. Doing a KWTV episode where I am in front of the camera is a little bit, well, not more complicated, but a little bit more, you know, elaborate. First of all, it's the same thing. I have to have an inspiration. And then I get this little script in my head saying, like, I could do that, I could do that, I could do that. That little script mostly says, I need a stand-up shot where they can see me. I need to find a nice location for it. Maybe we can do something funny, stuff like that. So then it's outside. I go look for a place where I can do a stand-up shot where I am in front of the camera talking to you guys. Or sometimes I do shots that I film inside the house. Or sometimes I need to go out and film stuff that needs to be cut in between scenes, fillers or stuff like that. But all of the filming is done most of the time using a one-man camera crew, a tripod with onboard with on top of it my Sony camera. And because I want the audio to be crisp, I record the audio on the Zoom H2 microphone. So that's it. It's just me. I put the camera there. I can flip the screen of the camera around so I can see myself. I hit record. I stand in front of the camera. I hit record again. I completely ignore all the strange stares that I get when I'm in the middle of this town doing stuff like this and just basically do my stand-up. Very, very simple. The audio doesn't come from the camera. As I said, I record it using either the H2 microphone or a lapel mic hooked up to the H2 recorder, and I sync in the whole audio stream afterwards in the pre-production. Well, the production of the KWTV screencast is done inside Final Cut Pro. That's a little bit more extensive than using GarageBand or, in this case, iMovie, because I used to do it in iMovie for the longest time. But Final Cut Pro, although it cost me a little bit, does give me a lot of more options to do, and it's a lot of fun to work with. And it actually has made the production of the whole thing simpler than before. So what I do there is I cut video, I sync the audio, I add effects, do transitions, do an overlay, perhaps add some music, make sure that the audio and the video that I have recorded are synced, and I do all of that in Final Cut Pro, mostly on my MacBook because I can carry it around. I have substantially more work on cutting down and editing a KWTV episode than on a podcast, but it's also a lot more fun to do. Once it's ready, I export it to a predefined setting in Final Cut Pro, and I just upload it to the Internet Archive. Back to the blog it is, and with PodPress, I just link to the file. PodPress automatically makes it a player, and I type up the show notes. Done. It's on the website. And then I also upload it to YouTube and to Vimeo just to have it on multiple places at the same time. And at the end of the line, Twitter feed takes over and posts the new show on the several social media channels that I have. And that's how I automated the production of KWTV. Well, guys and girls, that's it. That's all we have time for on this first episode of Season 3 of the Nightwise.com podcast. I hope you enjoyed the first show where we dove in depth to take a look at what gear we use, how we use it, what our workflows are, and what gets done behind the scenes before you get this episode in your very, very own podcatcher. So I hope you enjoyed the episode and be assured many more are to come in Season 3. If you want to get in touch with us, send us feedback, suggestions for show topics, or, tell us that we're doing a great job. Don't tell us if we don't do a great job. You can do that. Feedback@Nightwise.com is the email address. And you can also, of course, find us on Twitter. @Nightwise is our Twitter address. This is an independent show. We don't have sponsors. We don't ask you for money. We don't give you any ads and stuff like that. So the only thing that we ask in return is for you to tell a friend about the Nightwise.com website and about the content that we produce. Bring one more listener to the table, and that's all of the work that you have to do to get more karma points and support the show. We'll be back next week. It's getting pretty late here in Belgium. It's 10 o'clock, and I'm going to hang out in front of the TV a little bit. So we will see you on the flip side in 2 weeks on the edge of real and cyberspace, where there is one place you can go. My name is Nightwise. You have been enjoying the Nightcast podcast. See you guys next week. Until then, let tech work for you. Bye.